Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Q2 and H1 FY24 earnings conference call of Piramal Enterprises Limited, hosted by JM Financial Institutional Securities. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Sameer Bhise from JM Financial Institutional Securities. Thank you, and over to you, Mr. Bhise.
Thank you, Michelle. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the second quarter FY24 earnings conference call of Piramal Enterprises. Firstly, I would like to take this opportunity to thank the Piramal team and the management for giving us this opportunity to host the call. From the management team today, we have Mr. Ajay Piramal, Chairman, Piramal Group; Mr. Anand Piramal, Executive Director, Piramal Group; Mr. Jairam Sridharan, Managing Director, Piramal Capital and Housing Finance; Mr. Yesh Nadkarni, CEO of Wholesale Lending; Mr. Rupen Jhaveri, Group President; Ms. Upma Goel, Chief Financial Officer; and Mr. Ravi Singh, Head of Investor Relations at Piramal Enterprises. As always, we will have opening remarks from the management team, post which we will open the floor for Q&A. Over to you, sir. I would like to transfer the call to Mr. Ajay Piramal for his opening comments, post which we'll take the questions. Thank you.
Thank you, and welcome to our earnings call. Let me begin by wishing all of you a very happy Diwali and best wishes for the festive season. Before diving into our results for the quarter, a few comments on the macro backdrop in which our company operates. The global macro economy is clouded with uncertainties arising from record high inflation, geopolitical conflicts, tight financial conditions, and Chinese economic slowdown. Amidst this, India has demonstrated exceptional resilience fueled by strong domestic economic fundamentals. India's financial sector is playing an important role in ensuring sustained growth across vital sectors like infrastructure, real estate, and retail. As capacity utilization increases, demand for credit to invest in private CapEx will rise further. Indian banks and NBFCs have strengthened significantly in recent times, backed by several regulatory and supervisory initiatives for both banks and NBFCs, making them ready to meet this growth in credit. Large NBFCs have witnessed improved asset quality, higher capital buffers, and improved profitability over the last few quarters. Indian NBFCs have undergone a strong recovery despite a difficult operating environment characterized by COVID, high interest rates, and global economic and financial uncertainties. The retail credit demand has been strong. The current festive season has taken off well, and we expect the momentum to continue with improving economic conditions. However, El Niño can pose a risk, with lower acreage of the winter crop affecting rural consumer demand. We need to be cognizant about slippages that may emanate from these markets. We are optimistic about our loan book's growth going forward, and at the same time, vigilant on prevailing risks, including unsecured lending and the rural slowdown. Real estate demand continues to remain buoyant. While annual growth rates may come off the post-COVID peak at a pan-India level, there are markets where demand will continue to remain high, buoyed by India's rising economic activity and growing middle class. Moving to our company's performance and how we have delivered during the quarter, our Q2 performance was in line with our strategic focus of building a diversified retail business, an accelerated rundown of Wholesale 1.0, and building a granular Wholesale 2.0 book. Firstly, it was encouraging to witness the AUM getting in a growth mode. Our total assets under management grew by 4% Q-on-Q to 66,933 crores after 7 quarters of broadly unchanged overall AUM. Retail segment led this growth with the AUM growth of 55% year-on-year to 38,604 crores. Retail now comprises 58% of our total AUM versus 33% at end of March 2022. Within wholesale, the wholesale 2.0 AUM is up 48% quarter-on-quarter and now stands at 4,500 crores across real estate and the corporate mid-market lending. Wholesale 1.0 AUM is down 8% quarter-on-quarter to 23,827 crores. This is a 45% rundown since March 2022. Secondly, another key highlight for the second quarter of FY24 is a reduction of 13% quarter-on-quarter in the wholesale SR book to 3,259 crores. Thirdly, on retail asset quality, the DPD trends were either stable or down across all our retail products. Thus, consolidated GNPA ratio was down 10 basis points quarter-on-quarter to 2.7%, while the NNPA ratio was flat at 1.5%. Lastly, on operational performance, during the second quarter of this year, the improvement in yields drove the NIM expansion of 38 basis points quarter-on-quarter and nil growth of 10% and net interest income growth of 10% quarter-on-quarter. Fee income growth at 39% quarter-on-quarter and 159% year-on-year was also strong. Thus, RPPOP, excluding dividend income, grew by 27% from the last quarter to 237 crores. This, along with broadly stable credit costs, meant that our PAT, excluding exceptional items and one-offs, stood at 113 crores versus 30 crores in the first quarter. In the second quarter, we also successfully completed our share buyback of 1,750 crores as announced by the board last quarter. We remain strongly capitalized with a net worth of 28,710 crores and capital adequacy ratio of 31% on a consolidated basis. With these highlights, I will now hand over to Jairam, Yash, and Upma to discuss segments with specific highlights.
Thank you, Chairman, sir. I will walk you through the details of the retail lending segment and then hand over to Yash for the wholesale side of the business. Our retail AUM scaled 55% year-on-year, coupled with growth in quarterly disbursements as well of 57% year-on-year. So for the second quarter, our disbursement yield stood at 14.3%, while the overall book yield stood at 13.2%, excluding the POSI book. Our housing loan disbursements grew 55% year-on-year, with an average ticket size of 18.1 lakhs for the second quarter. 77% of our retail AUM is made up of secured loans, with an average CIBIL score greater than 740. 90-plus delinquency in all our retail products are stable to down and are currently well under control. Our unsecured retail book across four different product lines stands at rupees 8,512 crores. In recent months, there has been a lot of conversation on risk and unsecured lending. We believe this is a healthy conversation to have, and we have flagged it multiple times over the course of the last year. Over the last two quarters, through various measures to tighten credit lending, our disbursement volumes in unsecured have declined. Simultaneously, the risk metrics have remained benign with a slightly improving bias. 90-plus delinquency ratio has decreased from 1.6% at the end of last quarter to 1.4% as of September end. In this unsecured segment, we serve over 13.4 lakh customers with an average CIBIL score of 760. We continue to make steady progress towards the long-term operating profitability metrics, which we have shared with you in the past. Our yields in the retail business are steadily increasing on a book basis. Fee income is improving. OPEX ratio is lower than at the end of last year and flat QOQ. And asset quality continues to be benign. As we continue to expand our retail lending business, we also continue to invest in manpower, branch infrastructure, technology, and analytics for future growth. During the quarter, we added 19 new branches, aggregating now to 99 branches over the last 12 months. With this, today, we have a network of 442 full-service branches and 142 microfinance branches across our network. We serve across 596 districts in India, across 25 states. Our customer franchise now stands at 3.6 million, with us acquiring 2.5 lakh new customers during the quarter. Our active customers out of this 3.6 million is at 1.1 million. With that, I'll hand over to Yash to walk us through what happened in wholesale lending during the course of the quarter.
Thanks, Jairam, and good afternoon, everyone. In wholesale lending, we have achieved an accelerated rundown of 45% since March 2022. In our 1.0 AUM, in line with our strategic focus. Wholesale stage 1 AUM, excluding non-yielding assets in the nature of land assets, receivables, security receipts, and DHFL, on which we don't record yield, on that book, it stood at which stood at about 17,381 crore. We had an average yield of 12%. Our stage 2 plus 3 AUM combined reduced 63% year-on-year, to rupees 4,126 crore, with a provision coverage ratio of 32%. We continue to focus on resolution of stressed assets, which will shrink the wholesale portfolio in the short term, as we have communicated earlier as well. A dedicated team is involved in monitoring and executing the resolution strategy for some of the complex recoveries and enforcements aimed to improve recoveries and monetization of assets on an accelerated basis. Security receipts reduced by 9% QOQ, and is the first quarter during which we actually saw a decline in security receipts to a number of 4,862 crore, of which 67% have been relating to wholesale loans on the underlying assets. With this, our wholesale SRs reduced by 13% QOQ to a number of 3,259 crore as of Q2 FY24. As the resolution process continues, we expect our SR portfolio to reduce in the near term via a combination of sales, enforcement, and collections at our carrying value, while few more ARC sales are expected over the next two quarters. In wholesale 2.0 AUM, we are focusing on building a granular and high-quality portfolio, wherein our 2.0 AUM grew at 48% QOQ to 4,501 crore across real estate and corporate mid-market loan strategies. Our 2.0 loans are performing well and are in line with or ahead of underwriting, as reflected in significant prepayments that we have received to date. We received about 966 crore from wholesale 2.0 over the last six quarters, which illustrates the credit quality of the underlying portfolio. We disbursed 1,819 crore in the second quarter of FY24, of which 1,115 crore was disbursed in the month of September 23. The average ticket size is around 172 crore for real estate loans and 64 crore for corporate mid-market lending in this version of our AUM. We will further build this book in a calibrated manner while capitalizing on the market opportunity. With this, I'll hand over to my colleague Upma to cover financial performance and liabilities.
Thank you, Yash. Covering our financial performance, in Q2 FY24, our net interest margin expanded by 38 basis points Q1Q, supporting the net interest income growth of 10% quarter-on-quarter. Fee income continues to scale up well and was up 39% QOQ. Our OPEX was up 6% QOQ to 664 crores, led by growing retail business and our investments in tech platforms and distribution. Thus, our pre-provisioning operating profit, excluding dividend income, went up 27% quarter-on-quarter to 237 crores. Credit cost was at 1.2% versus 1.1% in quarter 1 FY24, which is in line with our expected range for credit cost. During Q2, in furtherance to the order dated 5th September and 20th September 23 of the Honorable Delhi High Court, Piramal Fund Management Private Limited, 100% subsidiary of Piramal Enterprises Limited, has agreed to refund or return the principal amount to all investors of IndiaREIT PMS as a one-time payment without admission of any liability and without prejudice basis. This led to recording of exceptional loss of 64 crores during the quarter. Our reported profit after tax for Q2 FY24 stood at 48 crores versus 509 crores in Q1 FY24. Profit after tax, excluding exceptions and one-offs, stood at 113 crores versus 30 crores in Q1 FY24. On liability management side, we continue to focus on diversifying our borrowing mix, including securitization. Our fixed to floating rate debt mix improved to 54-46 and will continue to see further improvements over coming quarters. Our cost of borrowings remains stable at 8.6%. Our ALM is well matched with positive gaps across all the buckets. With this, I'll hand it over to Chairman Sir for his concluding remarks.
We have given you a brief update of the first this quarter and of the first 6 months. The documents have been, the investor presentation has also been uploaded on the site. And now I will ask you to open the floor for questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask questions may please press star and one on their touchtone phone. If you wish to withdraw yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to only use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Avinash Singh from MK Global. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good afternoon. Thank you for the opportunity. So two questions. The first one would be around your credit cost, that is close to 2 billion. It has so many moving parts. If you can just help me understand that 683 crore that you have taken kind of a hit on the loan that you have de-recognized, what was the provision already there? Because I mean, the net negative 244 crore I see, that will be a kind of a sum of two parts that you would have reversed whatever you have provided on this part of the loan being de-recognized, and you would have incrementally provided some bit there. Also, to help us understand what part of your other income that you have sort of given in note that majorly is the recovery from write-off, is there some sort of a FLDG related income also in there? And if I were to look at the fair value gains line item, that's 78 or so, is it majorly now from the revaluation of SRs? So this is question one. And the second is that, okay, in terms of your QOQ reduction in wholesale 1.0, if you can just provide the sort of a breakup that how much of it is kind of the regular payments, prepayments, or how much of that is coming from the sell down of either the stress loan or standard loans? Thank you. These are my two questions.
Oh, that's a lot of questions. Okay. We'll try and take it in. So we will do the credit cost question first. There are three parts to your credit card cost question. I'll try and take some of them. Upma will add whatever I might miss, and then Yash will talk you through the wholesale 1.0 side of the story. See, your first point of how much exactly kind of the gross to gross comparison to essentially say, hey, kind of did new state three get formed? Did you did stuff get derecognized and kind of written off and go off the books? And how much was it? Like, I think the best way to kind of look at this is on a net-net basis. So 1.2% credit cost is probably the simplest way to look at this. That's what we have guided as well, that on a net basis, we expect our business in the long run to be about 1.5% credit cost business. We are at 120 basis points. Every time we derecognize something or we write off something, obviously, we will make incremental provisions and bring it up to 100% and then derecognize it, right? Obviously, we can derecognize only assets that are 100% provided. So yes, some part of this has gone towards that derecognition. The stage two and stage three, whatever is left on the books right now, you will see in our investment presentation on page 37 that stage two plus stage three, the provisions are broadly the same. They are maybe a little bit less in compared to last quarter. So they're a tiny bit less than last quarter. 200 is the net credit cost that we have had. So you can do the math and figure out what is the gross level incremental provisions that we have had to make to write off the cases. So that's a couple of hundred crores that you will see there. As far as recoveries are concerned, you had a side question there about are part of the recoveries coming from FLDG. The answer is yes. We had a two-digit number. We're not disclosing the specific number, but I'll just say that it's two-digit number. Which is sort of which is coming from FLDG. Yes, we do have FLDG recoveries as showing up as part of that as well. There was a third part to his question, which was. You asked whether the revaluation was about revaluation of SR. Not really, no. The revaluation of SR just got created. So it would be premature for us to start revaluing them upwards. A lot of the revaluation ends up happening actually on our old POCI book. Where cash flows come in, and based on that we end up doing some evaluations. So that's what you're seeing, that it's got nothing to do with SRs right now, at least. A year from now, if SRs are behaving really well, we might consider some revaluation, but it's too early at this point of time. Yash, you want to take the question on wholesale 1.0?
Yeah, I think your question, if I got that right, was the reduction in stage 2 and stage 3 book, right? What was the source of it?
I mean, overall, your QOQ reduction in wholesale 1.0, how much of this wholesale 1.0 reduction that, like, if I recall, some 8-9% QOQ, how much of that, I mean, absolute amount is coming because of the kind of your regular payment, and how much of it is, like, asset sell down, whether it's stress or standard?
Yeah. So I think predominantly it has been organic recoveries, where the underlying assets or a pool of other capital has taken out from the underlying position. I don't have the exact number QOQ handy to answer your question, but it has been a mixture of the two. But if I were to take a step back and tell you the composition of the repayments over a longer period of time, which is really the trend you should focus on, about 75% plus have been sourced through the asset cash flow themselves, right? So material part of the reduction that we have seen has come through the performance of the underlying assets and the partners who we worked with to be able to achieve that performance.
Okay, and if I can just follow up, let's look at the credit cost on net basis, that 200 crores odd number for the quarter. if you can provide now again sort of how much of it is on wholesale 1.0, wholesale 2.0 and retail?
See, the numbers are there, no? In the, if you look at our page 37, and you can see the stock that is there, and if you see our heavy disclosures, you will get to see kind of the recoveries that we have got. The best way to think of this is of say about 200 crores, right now, retail credit costs are going to be very small because retail is still a young book. So much of the credit cost, both the credit cost getting formed as well as the recoveries coming in, are all going to be kind of related to the wholesale part of the book. The retail part of the book will slowly come. So I think it's good enough right now. We're not making segment specific credit cost disclosures, so I'll just leave it at this point.
Okay. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, in order to ensure that the management will be able to address questions from all participants in the conference, may we request you to limit your questions to two per participant. Should you have a follow-up question, please rejoin the queue. Thank you. The next question is from the line of Abhijit Tibrewal from Motilal Oswal. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Good evening. Sir, I think coming back to the SRs,
Excuse me, sir. I'm sorry to interrupt, sir. Your voice is muffled. May we request you to use your handset, please?
Is it better now?
Sir, please proceed.
We'll
let you know.
Yeah, is it better now?
Yeah.
Yes, this is better.
I just wanted to understand the SR decline that has happened. So whenever the SRs run down, what impact will it have on the P&L or through which item will it get routed? Essentially trying to understand, there would be a certain fair value at which you would be carrying SRs on your balance sheet. So once SRs get resolved, so this quarter as well, you have sold down SRs, I think, which has led to SRs to ARCs, which has led to the decline. So when we sell down SRs, is there any component that comes and sits in the P&L, any line item which gets impacted when you sell down SRs to ARCs?
So when we sell down the SRs, if we are realizing the full SR value, there will not be any impact on the P&L. Any amount more than the SR value will go in the credit line item in the P&L. And if we are deducing by way of NAV, the impact comes into the loss as a loss and gain onto the fair valuation. So the reduction, what you are seeing it in our quarter, is the recovery without having any significant impact on the P&L.
Got it.
Just to clarify that, we haven't added SRs in this quarter. In fact, the SRs have got redeemed. That's the point I will highlight.
There's no sell down to the ARC.
We have recovered.
SRs, we have been able to sell, and we have been able to recover, equivalent value. So there's no meaningful P&L impact one way or the other during the course of the quarter.
Yeah.
Got it. Jayant, so the second question that I had was on this retail yield. So, I mean, obviously you've given out in your presentation why QOQ there have been moderation in the retail yields, because you've kind of cut down your unsecured disbursements. But just wanted to understand, at the overall company level, your yields have actually improved sequentially.
Yes.
So what has led to that? I mean, is there some other component in interest income?
Sure. So more of the mix that keeps moving towards retail, you will keep seeing this. It's even after the moderation in yield in retail, you're still at 14.25% incremental for the quarter. So that's what you're seeing. By the way, let me make one other point on that moderation clear. We were at 14.7 at the end of during last quarter in terms of disbursement yield in retail. That 14.7 went to 14.2. Some part of it is mix shift, as you rightly mentioned, less unsecured. But the other part, which is also equally important, is that within unsecured, particularly in the partnerships business, the new RBI guidelines on partnerships and FLDG, etc., and digital lending took hold in the course of the quarter. That led to some realignment in commercial. where earlier I might have charged a higher part of the interest to my P&L because I was not able to get the clawback from an FLDG format. Now in an FLDG format, I will actually charge less from an interest perspective, but I have that FLDG cover at the back end, so it will not show up in my credit cost. So the commercial rearrangement has also happened, which is what has actually shown up in the yield number.
Got it. Okay. And then maybe one last question that I had is, I mean, in one of the notes that you've given out in the financial statements, we talk about this principal business criteria for our HFC subsidiary. So wanted to understand as on September, where are we? And going forward, is it fair to expect that maybe because we are required to meet this principal business criteria by March 24? Which I believe is 50% at the overall level and 60% in individual home loans, will be kind of accelerating the growth in mortgages?
See, I think the current position is that we are well short of where we need to be. Having said that, we have known this for a while. So we have been in conversation with both NHB and RBI. And while I cannot tell you the specific details of that because that's privileged communication with the regulator. But suffice to say that we are in conversations with the regulator and they are well aware of what our realistic goals are. One of the things that you've got to be careful about in the lending business is trying to achieve extraordinary growth numbers just to achieve some of these portfolio mixes can have debilitating long-term effects. So we have to be careful about what we can do. In that, there are some things which are realistically doable and some things which are not that realistic. And we have been very upfront and open with the regulators on this matter and are in active conversation.
Okay. So then is there a case that in case we don't meet that criteria by March 24, we might have to go back to the regulator for an extension?
As I said, we are already in conversations. We are not going to wait for March 24. We are already in conversations with
him. Got it. And sir, just one last question. Sorry. So you've been last two quarters cleaning up your balance sheet. I mean, last quarter we had taken goodwill write-offs. This time you've done some cleanup on the India REIT side. I mean, more cleanup of the balance sheet that's envisaged in the next few quarters, or do you think we are largely done with regards to this cleaning up of the balance sheet?
We think we are largely there. There might be one, as you can see, the size of some of these cleanups is getting smaller and smaller every quarter. We don't think there is anything kind of major that's out there. Minor things might come up every now and then, like in all spring cleaning, Abhijit, like you might realize some other little thing in some corner, but nothing material.
Got it. This is very useful. Thank you so much. Wish you and your team the very best.
Thank you. A reminder to all the participants to limit their questions to two per participant. Should you have a follow-up question, please rejoin the queue. The next question is from the line of Kunal Shah from Citigroup. Please go ahead.
Hi, Kunal.
Yeah, hi. So, just again on this yield question at the company level, so once again to clarify, there is, when we are running down the wholesale book, there is no component of any, interest income which would have got booked into that, and it is purely the mix shift which has led to 38 bps overall yield increase despite 50 bps decline in the retail yields, yeah.
Correct. There's no one-off here. I will point out, however, that in the past, in quarters when you have significant NPA formation, you might see reversals of interest. This quarter, we have had neither reversals nor any one-off gains in the interest income.
Yeah, but no recovery income, which is there. Okay, which is in the yield.
Oh.
Okay. Yeah. And any particular reason in terms of the overall stage 2 and stage 3 provisioning coverage being lower? I think you have highlighted some point with respect to write-off. So is that the only component, or there are change in any of the assumptions? Because at the both stage 2 level also pool, we are seeing it lower. Otherwise, there is not much change. In fact, at the absolute number, but still provisioning the number is down. Yeah.
Yeah. The you're talking within wholesale or the full company level?
whole company level and primarily that's coming in from wholesale only largely. Yeah.
There is policy changes we don't do in the middle of the year, so there is nothing that has changed between last quarter and this quarter. It's exactly the same provisioning and ECL policy. In the wholesale side of the business, so there are two factors here that you should keep in mind. Firstly, that the wholesale and retail mix will keep changing in stage 2 and stage 3, and wholesale and retail, and even within retail, which product it is, will actually change the percentage provisioning that you will see in stage 2 and in stage 3. So if it's an HL, it might be 2% or 3% in stage 2 and 22%, 23% in stage 3. But if it's a PL, it might be, you know, 30% in stage 2 and like 70% in stage 3. It could be very different depending on the product mix that is in stage 2 and 3. So product mix matters in this, even if the absolute headline number is the same. The second point that I've made is that in wholesale, you know, because assets are lumpy, stage 2 conversations happen on an asset-to-asset basis. So LGD assessment you need to do on an asset-to-asset basis, and that might sometimes, depending on which asset is in stage 2 this time versus last time, it might create some small deltas in terms of provisioning. But policy-wise, nothing has really changed. Yash, anything you'd add?
No, absolutely. No precise description. But the
thing
I'll add is change is very marginal, right? As you can
see
on the numbers. Page
38.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks,
Mark. Thank you. The next question is from the line of Piran Engineer from CLSA. Please go ahead.
Hi, Piran.
Hey. Hi, Jairam. Just getting back, like follow-up questions on some that were asked earlier. I mean, these are more accounting related. Now, how do I reconcile your credit costs of 198 crores from the, you know, consolidated P&L, the PSC release? Because from there, it's like, shouldn't I just be deducting 244 crores from that 683 crores, and therefore that 440 odd crores should be your credit cost?
Can I just answer this part? You also have to add the other operating income, which is 184, that's the recovery we got it from the site of recovery from the prudentially written off account.
Okay, so this is a net credit cost, net of bad debt recoveries.
Absolutely.
Correct.
Now we are showing it in our IR deck.
Okay, got it. And so just to be clear, the write-offs this quarter is then 683 crores.
184
crores. No, write-off, not recovery, write-off.
New write-off is? No, your number is a little bit too big. I think it's more like in the 400 crore range. We will take this up offline and we'll show the exact numbers. Mota moti 400 crore kuch ka write-off hai yaar, aur 200 crore ka write-off recovery hai. Aur net apna, you know, credit cost jo hai, 200 ka hai. Mota moti ye math hai.
Okay, fair enough. Second thing, just again on accounting, the SR book of almost 5,000 crores, that sits in your investment book of 18,000 crores? Is that right?
It sits in the investment book, yes. But it also shows up in our AUM. When we show AUM, we add both loan book and this SR book in it.
Fair enough. And so just trying to understand, so when you recover money from the SR, basically, there's nothing that goes through the P&L and this investment gets converted into cash on the balance sheet, and that's how the balance sheet balances.
Correct. Except that the delta between the consideration that you get versus the book value will flow through P&L.
Fair enough. Okay. Okay, that answers my question. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take the next question from the line of Viral Shah from IIFL Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, Viral.
Yeah, hi, Jairam. Actually, I have basically two questions for you. So, one, can you give me the number in terms of the 30-plus DPD for each one of your four retail loan segments, including the unsecured?
छोड़ना यार जान मत ले 90 प्लस दिखा रहे हैं हम मतलब देखते हैं we'll see whether you want to show I've not started 30 plus का disclosure we'll see whether it is useful right now 90 plus trends we have started showing as a new disclosure this time 90 plus trends for the last 5 quarters see whether this is useful I will just tell you that the storyline in 30 plus while the levels are different the storyline is absolutely no different it shows exactly the same pattern. There is no accumulation that's happening in 30-day and 60-day buckets, if that's what you're looking for. There is no accumulation there, so the trend lines are very, very similar. The absolute values, we'll see whether we want to start doing disclosures in the future.
No, because last quarter in the analyst meet you had given out 30 plus DPD, so that's why I am asking.
But we don't want to do it every quarter, yeah. That's that metric is a little bit more volatile. There's no point actually just confusing. I think 90 plus is a good metric for us to for us to continue to share. We'll see whether we find it useful or maybe annually start showing it or something like that. We'll see. But as I said, please take a look at a 90 plus and just the deltas. 90 versus 30 ka delta, what you saw in the analyst day, nothing has changed. So trend lines are exactly the same.
So, okay, just delving over there, you mentioned the trend line is similar. So versus the last quarter where your unsecured loans had higher delinquencies quarter on quarter, so that trend continues for unsecured directionally or has it come down?
It has come down. No, like I just thought this quarter though, it has come down. Same thing has happened in 30 plus also.
Okay. Fair enough. And the second question I had was on the comment that you made with regards to FLDG and rear no FLDG being there. So just to understand this right, so now you have the FLDG cover. That's why the yields that you get would be relatively lower. So earlier there was no FLDG or even quasi-FLDG.
No, there was a quasi-FLDG. No, that's why we had a higher part of the yield accruing to us and that we would keep us high. And if credit event happened, we would not, pass on that higher yield to the originator because that's a service deficiency. But if the service was full, in the sense that we did not see a higher level of risk, then that higher yield would eventually get passed on back to them.
And can you give a sense of like what's the? Of course, we know the cap on the FLDG. But is the quasi FLDG now down to zero, or is it still there?
No, it's still there. It's still there. It's not as large as the FLDG is, but it's still there.
Got it, Jairam. Thank you so much. That's it from me.
Thank you. We'll take the next question from the line of Adarsh from Enam Holdings. Please go ahead.
Yeah,
hi, Jairam and team. Question to kind of realign your interest income. Just wanted to understand on a stock basis, your retail yields would be north of 13 at least?
On a stock basis, yeah, 13.2 excluding POCI and 13.8 including POCI.
Got it, Jairam. So because and would it be possible to give out, you have a wholesale AUM. What part of that is interest earning, like your stage 1 and stage 2 is about 28,000 crore. Does all of it accrue interest? Because, the implied yields on that book seems pretty low. If I take retail yields of 13%, then you have an investment book. If you do all of that, there is very little interest income left out of the wholesale book.
Adarsh, look at page 26, na. Page 26 में header जो है, it shows stage 1 AUM, ये wholesale का है, AUM is 17,381 crores, average yield is 12%.
This
is the
yielding
book. Oh, this is the yielding book, is it?
Correct.
Out of the 28,000 crores.
Correct.
Okay, got it. This kind of adds up. This is helpful, thanks.
So the just to remind everybody, the non-yielding part of the book is SR, land and receivables. And there is some DHFL book, which is non-yielding. So apart from so that delta is, what of hatane ke baad, 17,381 is the yielding book in wholesale.
Perfect. This is helpful, Jairam. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Arvind Chetty from Diamond Asia Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi sir. Thanks for taking this question. Just one question on the new customer acquisition on the retail part. So that's been slowing down significantly on YOY and QOQ basis as well. Could you explain the reasons? Of course, I understand on the digital part we are slowing down a bit.
Good observation. It's a good observation. It's all driven by the slowdown in unsecured. In terms of sheer number of customers, unsecured always gets you a lot more customers, order of magnitude more customers than secured. So while our secured business has been growing really strong, as you've seen in our numbers over the last 6 months, our unsecured business has slowed a bit, and that is what's resulting in a in a smaller customer acquisition. This will come back up, like, you know, as and when we get more comfortable. We've made a lot of credit policy changes over the last 6 months in this business. So as we get more comfortable with the credit quality of the new book that is actually getting booked, you might see us step on the accelerator a little bit more in the future, and you will see that come up. Your observation is right, but it's all got to do with reduction in unsecured.
Understood. And my second question is on the fintech partners that we have. So would we go ahead and sign FLDG with all the partners and to the extent of up to 5% or limited to?
As I said, about 70-odd% of our business is done with partners on the FLDG format, and the rest are not. The rest we have, let me produce. 50% is with FLDG format, 20% is non-FLDG, but some other form of credit enhancement by the partner, and the rest 30% is risk on our own book.
Got it, yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Vinod Jain from WF Advisors. Please go ahead.
Good evening. I seek a better understanding of two items of P&L. One is the net loss on derecognition of financial instruments under amortized cost of 683 crores. And the second is the impairment allowance reversals of financial instruments of 245 crores. My question is only twofold. One is, are these interrelated? And two, what is the view on these items going forward?
Net loss on derecognition of financial instruments.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Ma'am, your audio is too low, ma'am.
This net loss on derecognition of financial instruments is primarily on account of the assets which has been actually moved out of the balance sheet.
Right off.
Now, impairment is the actual impairment of our instrument, which is nothing but in the form of ECL, expected credit loss. So when we look into the overall credit cost, we have to add up these two lines, because there is a possibility when we actually sell down the book, it moves from the ECL to the net loss on derecognition of financial instruments.
Okay. Then what is the view on these going forward, madam? Can you give us some understanding of the view on these items?
See, we're talking about the credit cost. So when you have to look into the credit cost, that is the range you have to look into it. So that's roughly 1.2 sort of a number what we have been expecting.
1.2, madam?
Yes.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Kunal Shah from Citigroup. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the follow-up. So, on the unsecured part of it, if I look at the details in the presentation, then is that disbursement particularly lower on account of, maybe if we have to break it up into the various segments, then what would have led to this decrease in the disbursement? Is it more of a digital, personal, unsecured SME, and what is it on account of tightening on the of the norms and what we would have done? Or maybe any of the particular partnerships we are re-evaluating what is happening out there, and where should this number stabilize? Is it like this downtrend expected to continue given this kind of an environment? Yeah.
Yeah, no, good question. So of the four products that we speak about in digital unsecured, microfinance is roughly the same as what it was in Q4. Nothing much has changed there. It has neither gone up nor down. Unsecured MSME is, it was low in Q1, but it's gone back to Q4 levels now. You know, personal loans is higher than where we were in Q4. All the reduction has actually happened in digital loans, the partnership-driven business. That's where all the reduction has come. This business is now roughly one half the size that it was in Q4, and all of it is through tightening of credit criteria, not by selection of partners. So across every partner, our business volumes are down because we have just tightened credit criteria. As I've mentioned in the past, we had a first round of credit tightening in November and another significant round of tightening in April this year. That's what has actually started to show now in terms of the numbers. In terms of outlook, I think that downward reduction is kind of done. I feel comfortable now looking at the last 6 months of originations, Kunal. We are feeling pretty okay with the credit quality, the new business credit quality in terms of early risk, etc. It's looking good. You might see us actually bend this curve and start going in the other direction, soon enough.
Okay. So if you can just explain in terms of this proportion, maybe when we look at it in terms of the partnership, so that is also down from, so that is down from 44 to 41 odd percent, and incrementally we are doing more of the business from the branches wherein that proportion has now gone up to almost like 51 odd percent or so.
Right. So just to put a rupee crore number on it, in the month of March we did 750 crores of business through partnerships, digital loans through partnerships. In the month of September we did 350 crores.
Okay, and nothing much to read into the increase in the ticket size which has been there in digital loans.
Partnerships made the ticket size is smaller, so if that proportion comes down, the average ticket size will go up.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Shubhranshu Mishra from Philip Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, just to understand the FLDG with our partnerships, are we at 5% or is there something more than 5% with certain partners? That is first. Second is, what kind of ticket sizes minimum are we doing and maximum are we doing in terms of personal loans? And the minimum and maximum IRRs we are doing in personal loans. Thanks.
Okay. See, on FLDG, regulatorily, FLDG is capped at 5%. So, practically in all the cases that we do FLDG, we will be at 5%. There might be some other commercial arrangements that we might have with the originator, but within the FLDG format, you can only do 5%, and that's kind of where we are. Your question on ticket sizes, I think, and your ticket sizes and yield, I think. On ticket size, we do all ticket sizes, but I guess you're trying to figure out what is the small ticket exposure that we have is within the unsecured population. So within that 8,500 odd, which is there in unsecured, this small ticket unsecured, which is kind of been the subject of a lot of conversation, less than 50,000, we have about 480 crores. So it's a very small percentage of our overall exposure in unsecured is less than 50,000, less than 25,000, it's about 175 crores. So our ratios are very small. I think a lot of you have heard this in other calls as well, but let me also add some information to the same conversation. We do also see on our portfolio the same dynamic, which is that the smaller the ticket size, higher the risk. While we talked about 1.4% as the overall 90 plus delinquency of unsecured, when you look at the less than 50,000 category, that 1.4% basically doubles, actually a little bit more than doubles. It's something like 3.5%. If you go even smaller, if you just look at the less than 25,000 rupee category, that population is something like 6%. So it doubles again. So there is almost a 4x differential between the regular PL and the really small ticket PL right now in terms of risk that we are seeing on our portfolio. But the less than 25K portfolio is very small for us, 175 crores, and less than 50K is about 480 odd crores.
Right, just to come back to FLDG, my fair understanding of FLDG is that it's an over-the-counter contract between the lender and the originator, so it can be plus or minus of 5%, but then when the regulator says that it is going to be capped at 5%, it means that it's going to be 5%, right? How can we have another commercial arrangement with the originator?
I will not be able to talk about that on this call, man. Let me just reiterate that our FLDG is capped at 5%.
For all originators?
Yes.
Mr. Mishra, do you have any further questions?
No, thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Jairam Sridharan for his closing comments. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, friends. To conclude, the performance of the company in the second quarter and the first half FY24 strengthens our confidence on the company continuing in growth mode and improving profitability to our stated goals. To achieve this, we remain focused on our core strategic priorities. Number one, building a leading housing-focused diversified retail business with our high-tech plus high-touch strategy. Number two, effectively running down our wholesale 1.0 AUM while building a profitable and robust wholesale 2.0 AUM. And number three, optimizing our capital allocation and achieving steady-state ROA for our shareholders. I thank everybody for joining the call today. If you have any further questions, please feel free to reach out to our investor relations team. Season's greetings from the entire crew at Piramal. Have a great day. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, sir. Thank you, members of the management. I would now like to invite Mr. Sameer Bhise for the closing remarks. Over to you, Mr. Bhise.
Thank you, Michelle, and thank you to the team of Piramal Enterprises for giving us the opportunity to host this call. You may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of JM Financial Institutional Securities, that concludes this conference. We thank you for joining us and you may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.